Grade 6 Conference, Lecture 29, Watch Your Language, Part 2. I am going to suggest to you soon that you work with your 6th graders on Latin and do some Latin grammar with them, if for no other reason than they'll really appreciate how much easier English grammar is. And one of the big differences is that Latin is very much of a case language, so that nouns change their spelling when they're in one case or in another. We can tell what position they occupy in a sentence, whether they're subject or object. English has dropped a good deal of that, which makes it easier to use, but also makes it more challenging for us, number one, to be able to tell right away whether a noun is the object or subject of a sentence. That takes us back to lie and lay, of course. And also, it makes it confusing in those rare situations where we still do have case and have to be very attentive to that. So this is where we are working with pronouns. Pronouns still carry an artifact quality from the Latin, and they do change quite a bit, unlike the nouns, which remain quite constant. So a pronoun will change the form according to its role, we might say. Is it a subject? Is it an object? Or is it possessive? So we could say, he eats to live while she lives to eat. He and she are both subjects in that sentence. Don't change at all. Objects. To him, food points to life. To her, life points to food. Why him and why her? Because both of those pronouns are preceded by the preposition to. So they immediately become objects, objects of a preposition. To him, food points to life. To her, life points to food. And then possessive, we all know that. His approach to food is practical. Her approach is passionate. So just the simple lists that you probably have somewhere of pronouns in the subject form: I, you, he, she, it, they, we, who, and object form: me, you, him, her, it, them, us, whom. And my own experience has been that the greatest problem that people altogether have, and to some extent Waldorf practitioners and their students have, is the question of I and me. That word I, ich in German, that Steiner points to as being so incredibly important. To be able to say the word I, to be able to experience the word I, the only name that I can call myself. Nobody can call me I. This is unique. This really points to the spirit core within us, that eternal flame that we carry within. And again, people don't use it. They use me instead. There is this kind of primitivism, almost a barbaric quality, arising in our language as we find it difficult or impossible to correctly use the simple word I. So, interestingly, you and it remain the same in subject and object form. All of the other pronouns change. So the sentence sort of points to which one we use, and a lot of this stuff becomes reflexive, even a bit instinctive. But here's a typical area where there is great confusion. Which is correct? I am shorter than him. I am shorter than he. or there's no one I look up to more than he. There's no one I look up to more than him. The correct sentences are, I am shorter than he. Nobody, but nobody speaks this way anymore, and this is terrible. It's really, really important. When we say then, this does not turn the next word, the pronoun, into an object. It remains a subject. Whereas, there's no one I look up to more than him. Why is that correct? Because when we are working with that kind of comparison, we're really saying, there's no one I look up to more than I look up to him. And there we have to, that preposition again. So him is the object of the preposition. A comparative statement can convey different meanings, and it really depends on the case of a pronoun. So we can say, I like chocolate ice cream more than he. Or, I like chocolate ice cream more than him. What does that mean? The first one is, he and I talked about whether we like chocolate ice cream, and we realized that I like chocolate ice cream more than he likes chocolate ice cream. So I like chocolate ice cream more than he, which really implies more than he does. I like chocolate ice cream more than he likes chocolate ice cream. So you see, we really have two subjects here. I like chocolate ice cream more than him means I like chocolate ice cream more than I like that guy. You know, if I had a choice, do you want to spend time with him or you want some chocolate ice cream? I would go for the chocolate ice cream. Completely changes the meaning, and yet it is very, very common that people would say, I like chocolate ice cream more than him. I'm taller than him. I'm smarter than him. No, no, no. We have to see that we're really speaking in an abbreviated way. I am smarter than he is. I am taller than he is. I am shorter than she is. So we have to recognize when we are working with then that in most situations it's going to be followed by the subjective form of the pronoun and not the objective. And once again, dear teachers, you've really got to learn this. You've got to steel yourselves and be sure that you present this properly to the children. There's nothing worse than a grammar lesson in which you're showing proper usage on the board or on a piece of paper, and the children say, but you don't talk that way. You always say this or that. They're taking this in very, very deeply. How deeply are they taking this in? Well, I've been around the block enough now that I find myself more and more often visiting classrooms that are being taught by adults who once upon a time were students in my school. Now and then they were my students in the grades, or they were the students of class teachers whom I know well and whom I visited on occasion. And I listened to them speaking to their students. Now, certainly there are times when they're speaking in their particular unique way, when they're very relaxed and you feel the personality of this particular teacher coming through. But then there are times when they are really working very hard to teach something just right. And at that time, I can hear the inflection, I can hear the voice, and I can hear the grammatical usage of the teacher who taught them. Very, very remarkable. You realize how deeply that goes, that most of the time they had these teachers for 8 years. So a lot was really impressed on the etheric body. So that when this former student of that teacher is now in a teaching position. What was impressed by a teacher is going to come out very strongly. And of course, I'm sure it comes out in other situations, not just for those who have happened to become Waldorf teachers, but I don't tend to see too many of them in action. So I just want to say to you that you are, with your speech, with your grammar, you are working very, very deeply on your students, making a very deep impression on them, and it's very, very important. And now I just want to speak about perfect tense, which is something that we'll be working with the students, but here again, just for yourself, because perfect tense is starting to fade away. People will choose the easier of two or three possibilities of expressing something. And it may be that there are children in your class who rarely, if ever, have heard an adult speaking in perfect tense. So just to review, we have present perfect and we have past perfect. So present perfect involves have or has as the helping verb, plus a past participle, such as asked or danced. So it represents an action that began in the past, continued over time, and extends to the present moment. That's why even though it's past tense, we speak of it as present perfect. It's something that's extending to this moment. So this really takes us on a journey through time. I've often asked Charles how old he is. He jumps around the question more than once. Or he has danced around the question more than once. I have often asked Charles how old he is. Have asked. There's your present perfect. And that means that I continue to ask. I'll probably ask today and I'll ask tomorrow. And he has often jumped around the question. He has jumped around the question more than once. Has jumped. Has danced. Same thing, an action that has happened in the past and continues to happen right now. So there's this continuing quality with that. We'll go back to this with the children. Past perfect, this involves had as a helping verb. So only had. Present perfect, you have or has. Past perfect, you only need had. And it's followed also by a past participle. So this is a little bit different. It represents a past action that happened earlier than another past action. You're writing about something that occurred in the simple past, but you also want to refer to something that occurred before that. That's when you need the past perfect tense. So here are some examples. Charles said that he had applied for a sports scholarship. Charles said, he was telling me something in the past. He was telling me what he had done before he said it. He said he had applied for a scholarship. Okay, so said is simple past. Had applied is past perfect. He did not receive a scholarship because he had not revealed his age. He did not receive a scholarship, simple past, because he had not revealed his age. He had not revealed, had revealed, past perfect. So again, we'll work on that. It is very important in sixth grade, besides the advice that I gave you to speak faster, to move at a more rapid pace, but also to create sentences of greater complexity. You have to start thinking in compound sentences. You have to start using subsidiary clauses, and you have to start speaking now and then anyway in past perfect and in present perfect. This will be of great help to your students, and when I speak in the next lectures about the grammar that you'll be teaching them, we'll see why this is so.